Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, are you ready to be led into reclaiming the republic? I guess that's the real question, because that's what the show is trying to do, those things that we all believe in restoring our constitutional republic and our individual liberties and sovereignties. This show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, and if you go to that website and MobiusStripPress.com, you will be able to get our content and subsequent links and support documents. I have plenty of little free books that I put up there, like Plato's Republic and so forth. The number to call in is 215-867-8255. And with that, let's talk about those three reasons why you really want to download these podcasts, because this is the only show, as I started off with, that is providing a solution, constitutional solution in restoring the republic. It's not some risk. It's not some status quo. It's not the establishment. It is the process that Madison and Jefferson used, and I will get into, hopefully, that today as we start talking about what Jefferson said about the encroachments of the federal government. In addition to that, if you want to call in, again, the lines are open, and that's 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. The second reason why you want to download these podcasts is the fact that these podcasts interrelate with each other. I'm going to get into some content today that I've talked about a little bit before, and it's kind of, I'm stitching this all together. It's like a tapestry. And so to make the big picture, you know, come alive, or for you to really get it, you kind of have to understand all of these different shows. Bear in mind the content on these shows, and this is the third reason. This is not ephemeral or perishable information. This is here to educate you so that you can become a part of the solution, as I constantly say. So where do you get these podcasts? These are on reclaimingtherepublic.org. With that, I'm also offering a free set of books. If you can tell me which three crimes has been delegated to the federal government in the Constitution, and it has nothing to do with collusion in Russia, but there are three crimes in the Constitution that the states delegated to the general government, and it's within their jurisdiction constitutionally. Lots of things aren't, but there are three things that are. And with that, let me just kind of jump into some of the top topics, because it's obvious that there's some indictments that are coming out of the Mueller investigation. And I guess the question is, where's the announcement on the closing of the investigation? I'm still waiting for that, because it seems like they just enjoy spending the money. And everything that they've done has proven more of the Democrats being culpable and corrupt and should be indicted and investigated. So where's the announcement on the investigation of the investigators and informants and the people that were crying for the investigation? Maybe that's who we should be investigating. Even worse, and as I've kind of talked, and it's kind of been dominating the news cycle for the past couple of days, is this shooting down in Florida. And again, my heart goes out to those victims and the families that are having to deal with those losses. But as the news came out and the question is, did the FBI really drop the ball? They're saying that the FBI dropped the ball. The FBI has admitted to dropping the ball somewhat, that they failed to act. But here's the question. So I always kind of look at this at a different angle, and I basically, my angle is this. Did the FBI drop the ball on this, or is this another sign of the trend of horrendous patterns of the progressive narrative? In other words, sometimes you gotta have to let some people, you know, like in some styles of parenting, some parents will opt to allow their child to skin their legs and get out there and make mistakes. And some parents would go, no, 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 we got to bubble wrap them and keep them safe and keep them germ free. And so the progressives in, I guess, the bigger picture, you know, they kind of have a different angle on this. And if I could say so, a lot of times these types of things, who was it that said never let a crisis go to waste? It wasn't that Rahm Emanuel? I think so. The mayor of Chicago now. All of these things are a means to an end. In other words, they're waiting in the winds for the next shoe to drop so that they can come right out in front of the cameras on a microphone and say, oh, we've got to do this. You have to surrender more of your liberties because it's for your own good. So why is it that we constantly ignore this mountain range, not just a mountain of data? This is a mountain range of empirical data that we know that you cannot trust the progressives. They have no they have no reverence towards the law. They have no reverence towards life or individual liberty. They don't care whatever it takes to get their objective in subjugating and controlling you, because you're dangerous and you need to be controlled for your own good. I mean, that is their attitude. You can't tell me otherwise. So the statist, nationalist, communist, or the other word for them that I like to use is Platonist, because let's give credit due to the real genius of thought of the statist ideology, or at least the guy that first wrote it on paper, which was Plato. And so these are Platonists that follow that path of the Republic, of creating a state that controls every facet of our lives. Well, these folks, these statists, nationalists, communists, Platoists, or Platonists, they have no concern of the cost of their decisions. They don't care as long as it gets them to their end. Hitler didn't care. He had no compunction and no remorse whatsoever of how many people died in his chambers. And don't forget, it wasn't the Jews that first died in his chambers. The first people that they put to death were those who were the sick, infirmate, or the, you know, those who were lame and elderly, and those, let's just call them the non-productive members of society, because that was the angle. These people are just a drain on our resources. And come on, grandma, come on, you know, poor kids that, you know, don't have the full faculties and so forth. They were put to death. And I think it was something like a 250,000, half a million, somewhere in there. It was a lot of people that they removed from their society so that they could live a little bit better. And you've got to be kidding me, right? But no, that's the mind model of a statist. And Hitler was a statist. He wanted to nationalize and control everything. If you read Mein Kampf, which I happen to cite in my first book, one of the things he had to focus on was he had to take and get rid of the Republic. He had to pull all powers from the subordinate states within the Republic of Germany so that he could nationalize and control all things. That was his objective, so that he could move forward with his big agenda. And I'm telling you, he had a big agenda. And so do the statists. And actually, if you look at the empirical mountain range of data, they constantly do the exact same thing. Napoleon didn't care. Stalin didn't care. Pol Pot, he didn't care. As a matter of fact, Pol Pot, you know, took a completely different approach. I mean, what did he do? He actually executed anybody with an education. He saw some of the mistakes, he thought, in the last revolutions and goes, you know what? They kept some of those smart people around. I'm getting rid of them. So if you look at their goals, their objectives, and how they get there, this is just a huge trend. And if you travel along this mountain range of empirical data, you will find that this is a very disturbing trend. And so I apologize for cutting this thought out, but I will be right back after a word from our sponsors, because we just hit a hard break. But I will want to get back to this and the value of life. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you.
Rippey Homes believes that the American dream is not simply owning your home, but owning your dream home. Are you ready to upgrade, expand, or start your own custom home? If you are, I'd like to invite you to check out Rippey Homes at cgrippey.com. They offer end-to-end service from real estate to remodeling and specializes in custom homes, and they love to partner with their customers in making a difficult project worry-free. From the design to the moving in, they are with you every step of the way. If you have that dream home and looking to remodel, whether it's converting your kitchen and bath into your own heaven on earth or adding a new room, Rippey Homes has the tools, talent, and experience you can trust. So if you're ready to pull the trigger on a remodel or building that custom home, contact Cameron Rippey at cgrippey.com. That's cgrippey.com.
This is G.R. Mobley. The reason the progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost all billionaires in the world are funding a vast array of different groups, and their efforts are to undermine our Republican Constitution. If you don't believe me, Google the donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, and many other state rights, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved and supporting programs based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. Thank you.
This is G.R. Mobley. Did you know your overall health is connected to your dental health? And as you get older, this becomes more and more important. If you're like me, going to the dentist can be terrifying. So for me to maintain my dental health and overall health, I need a great dentist and staff who are sensitive to my fear, pain, and even my fear of the cost of dental work. This is why it took me almost 2 years to find a great dentist after I moved here. Bottom line, I need a great dentist just to get into the chair, even for a regular cleaning. This is why I personally recommend Dr. Vaughn Tracy as not only a great dentist, but a patriot and a dentist that cares about your comfort and health. You can find him at VaughnTracyDDS.com. That's VaughnTracyDDS.com. Then you can agree with me, it's great to have a great dentist.
Hi, this is G.R. Mobley. If you've listened to my weekly show, Reclaiming the Republic, right here on Red State Talk Radio, every weekday evening from 6 to 7 Eastern and 3 to 4 Pacific, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. It is a hard, fast contract. In accordance to Article 7, the states are the only stakeholders in this contract, and inherent in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight over the contract. This means they can audit the contract against the general government and the unconstitutional powers they are exercising. Any single state can perform this audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what I refer to as Republic Review. Please read my executive summary on reclaimingtherepublic.org to learn the details about Republic Review. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And I was just talking about how the progressives have no value for human life. They're not compassionate people. They really don't care. What they care about are their ultimate goals, and that ultimate goal is subjugation and control. It's all about power and control. And so because these folks don't value life, that's because these folks don't value individual liberty and individual sovereignty. Our nation was founded on these principles, folks, and so that's why it's incompatible to have statist ideologies, statist programs, and statist government, because the cost of that is individual liberty and individual sovereignty. Now, I'll get into this a little bit more, but in the news or in the sub or ultra sub news, there are some anti-conventionites or people that are opponents to the Constitutional Convention. And then there's these people that are opponents or proponents. And I'm the guy in the middle. I don't want to see a Constitutional Convention, nor do I want to see the continuance of the status quo. The continuance of the status quo is why we're in the position we're in. And this dialogue between the two of these, it's like they're so enamored in their own trenches and fighting each other that they're not willing to come out and actually meet in the middle. And that may be our demise. As a matter of fact, that will be our demise. If we're unable to set aside our differences and our self-interest, we are doomed. But the question is, now that they're seeing some of these little victories that they've got, they keep on saying, oh, they're close to creating this convention. Give us more money. Sounds like they're serving their self-interests because they're using fear-mongering in trying to create you, the un-anti-conventionite, the person that hasn't really lobbied in because you just may not care. They're trying to ask you to contribute, give them money, and so forth. And the question is, well, okay, I'll give you money, but what's your plan? Now, don't tell me you're anti-convention. What's the plan of getting the genie back in the bottle? What's the plan in shutting down all this unconstitutional government, this spending on social programs, all unconstitutional stuff? What's your plan in doing that? And if they tell you, oh, well, we're just going to educate people, we're going to vote good guys in, then they're basically, they don't have a plan. They have no solution other than they're kind of like the organization of no, or as we used to call the Republicans and now the Democrats, the party of no, because they have no plan and they just say no to everything that is a part of somebody else's plan that's not theirs. And so they're just defeatists, if you understand what I'm saying. So that's in the news as well. They're dancing in the end zone because a few states have basically shut down the convention of states efforts, Idaho, and I don't know the other two. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about Plato's Republic. Plato's Republic basically establishes this concept that the state is the sovereign. Okay, so we understand what a state is, right? What's a state? Well, the state could be the state you live in, because in our republic, each state are independent sovereigns. And as a matter of fact, each of the original colonies were listed in the treaty with Britain and King George as independent sovereigns. They did not recognize the conglomerate or the confederacy of these independent states. But when they moved forward in creating the Constitution, and even though there's other nations, whether they recognize this republic or not, we are a republic of states, and that means nations. The head of state is the leader of a nation. So the governors are heads of state. And if you really think about it, our governors in the United States are equal to those, let's call them, heads of states of Italy, France, England, and so forth. The only difference probably between some of those states and our states is some of those states still have monarchs. Anyway, moving on. So who is the state within Plato's Republic as we look at today's Platonist play or their plan and strategy? Who's the state? Is the state the United States, or is the state every single state? No, I don't think so. And I think what we need to start looking at is that the states are like administrative functions, because it's not like America's driving this. Why is all of these things happening around the world as far as destabilization for the Arab Spring, this plan of migration of these problems moving into Europe, out of the Mediterranean and out of Africa, all the unstable government in Africa, the problems and the oppression that's going on in Asia, like Indonesia and the Philippines and so forth. And so who is it that is the state? And I'm going to tell you, this is a new world concept that Adam Weishaupt talked about. And this state is a collective of elitists who have brought into a plan to subjugate the world. And they've basically bought into Weishaupt's plan of what he basically proposed for a plan of the Illuminati in obtaining control. And so not that the Illuminati is necessarily behind this anymore, because that's why when you really start looking at a single conspiracy theory, it doesn't hold water. But when you start interconnecting things and saying, well, maybe these things are connected and maybe these things are a part of a different conspiracy, but maybe it's not Russia, maybe it's not China, maybe it's not the United States. And I'm telling you, it's not. It is a small collective of elitists who are driving this plan. And these people have money, lots of money. And if you look at the world's richest people and those people, so there's different types of riches, by the way. And so the crowns are pretty rich. And, you know, it's hard to quantify what a crown is worth, but we know Bill Gates is worth billions, and so is Warren Buffett, and so forth and so on. And there's lots of billionaires that do not live in the United States that don't necessarily care for us and our freedoms and so forth. So as progressives point their finger of judgment at corporations, most of these are really not the problem. There are a few select globalist corporations that are a part of the problem because they are a part of moving everybody forward. Most nations and globalists are simply, and I see globalist corporations are simply tools for the global elitists. These fools or tools, whatever you want to call them, are not the end in themselves. They are the means to an end. This process is moving the world into subjugation as a plan. And so as we slowly look at us sliding towards spending us into oblivion, what happens? Well, do we just, you know, set the debt clock to zero again and say, well, we're just going to ignore that? Are we going to allow, or will our debtors allow us to do that? You got to see there's a contract involved in this debting and loaning of money. And people hold money contracts pretty precious. But there's one contract that most people used to hold even more precious. And that contract was the contract of liberty. People were willing to die for liberty. Just like in those times, they also were willing to die for their honor. You got to remember, how did Alexander Hamilton die? He was killed in a duo over honor. And so I just want you to understand that back in those days, when liberty meant everything, then people were willing to die for it. But today, it just seems like riches and control that people are willing to die for. So we have to start changing our paradigm, and we have to start understanding the cost of liberty before we have to really fight to get it back. We can't afford to do that, folks. And we have the opportunity right here in front of us. And I've been providing you all sorts of marketing concepts of these terrible things that we've gotten out of the Obama administration and the Clintons and the Bushes. So let's be fair, they were all terrible. And I don't want to go over all of those. I will go through some more of those. But when we get back, I want to get into the Kentucky resolution. So please stay tuned, and I'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. My show, Reclaiming the Republic, is more than an educational show. My intent is also to work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way, we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. Republic. It is result-oriented and is live across the Republic. Download and share our podcasts. Like, follow, and share our page, Mobius Strip Press, and the articles and content posted on our Facebook page. Get informed about groups in the local area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. This is G.R. Mobley. I'm working with Trevor Lawton, Douglas V. Gibbs, Tom DeWeese, John Hancock, and many other good patriots in setting up rodeos for Republic Review this summer. We're doing this in Wyoming, Utah, South Dakota, Idaho, Kansas, and North Dakota for this election cycle. If you are beginning to understand the power of Republic Review, then we need your help one way or another. More importantly, if you live in these states or know any patriotic leadership, whether that's an elected official, grassroots leader, or political leader, please reach out to me on Facebook or email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know who we can work with in organizing these events. It is our intent to get one and hopefully all of these states to call for Republic Review. If we can get this started, I promise you we will make America great once and for all. Thank you. This is G.R. Mobley. I've been on the radio for over a year, and for over a decade, I've been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we are going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument, and most do not like it for money reasons. If you have not read my executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can pick up my executive summaries, books, and content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you'll know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content. Most of it's free at reclaimingtherepublic.org and mobistrippress.com as well. This way, you can become a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are supporting to undermine our Republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. So let me set this up. And I want to be very clear on this. If you understand, when they just launched this constitutional government, they had everything they really wanted. They even had the Bill of Rights. So the people and everybody else were just going steaming away into the sunset like it was just a beautiful cruise, if you've ever been on a cruise. And all of a sudden, there was a lot of turmoil over who was in charge, and there was There was a lot of turmoil between parties in charge, because the parties, and Washington was the one that warned us about parties in his farewell address, because they were starting to factionalize and divide us as a nation again. And so what ended up happening was the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, or actually at this point in time, it was the Republicans. And so many people call them the Democratic Republicans. That was a spin that Jefferson used for identifying the type of Republican that they were. And so they were actually Republicans. He called them Republicans. And if you read his first inaugural address, he didn't say, we're all Federalists, we're all Democratic Republicans. He said, we're all Republicans and we're all Federalists. So to be clear, these two parties were literally at each other's throats between Adams and Jefferson, and it split a long time friendship. I mean, long time, decades of being friends. And so what this thing that split them and what really was the straw that broke the camel's back was when Congress passed a law to silence political opposition. Now, how many times in our recent history have we seen silenced opposition? Well, shoot, the FBI's been doing it. We've seen the IRS doing it. I mean, in almost as many times as they could possibly get away with it, they have been silencing the opposition. And Jefferson was not going to take that. And when he saw those trends, see, the federal government at that point in time couldn't, because they didn't have these huge bureaucratic, unconstitutional governments like the Department of Justice and so forth. And so what did they do? Well, they passed a law that says you can't say things that offend and hurt, you know, and make, you know, an opposition party, the party in power or what have you, look bad. And so that was the Sedition Act. And they had three other acts that went with that. And so Jefferson, instead of going out and saying, you know what, we're going to have to amend the Constitution. Let's go, you know, apply for a convention or the Article 5 Convention of States, and let's convince all of our neighbors and siblings in the Republic to join us. They didn't do that. That's the furthest thing from their mind, because why? You don't need to amend the Constitution to fix a violation of the contract. You don't need one. What you need is to enforce the contract and get the compliance out of your subcontractor or out of this little delegated power you created, because the states created this federal government. So what they did was they went back to their state legislatures of Kentucky and Virginia. Madison went to Virginia and Jefferson went to Kentucky. I think at one point in time, they both were in Kentucky, but Madison ended up going to Virginia, writing the resolutions for the state of the Virginia legislatures, or helping them, and basically teaching these. I mean, I would have loved to have been there. Boy, would that be some great video on YouTube, right? Anyway, it's hard to get good YouTube history, isn't it? Anywho, what they did was they passed these resolutions. That's the first thing they had to do, is they had to audit the Constitution. And what I mean by that is they had to review and assess the Constitution and say, you know what? There's nowhere in here that they can do this. They can't pass laws against speech. And in addition to that, there's an amendment that says they cannot infringe your freedom of speech. So where the heck do they get off? So they wrote, after auditing, they wrote a resolution, and then these resolutions went as appeals to all of the rest of the states. So now you have the back history on this. So let me read some of these resolutions that Jefferson wrote in the Kentucky Resolution of October 1798. Resolved that the several states composing the United States of America are not united on the principle of unlimited submission to their general government, but that by a contract under the style and title of a constitution for the United States and the amendments thereto, they constituted a general government for special purposes, delegated to that government certain definite powers, reserving each state to itself the residuary mass of right to their own self-government, and that whensoever the general government assumes undelegated powers, its acts are unauthoritative, void, and of no force, that to this compact each state acceded as a state and is an integral party, its co-states forming as to itself the party, that the government created by this compact was not made the exclusive or final judge of the extent of the powers delegated to itself. since that would have made its discretion and not the Constitution the measure of its powers by that, as in all cases of compact among powers, having no common judge, each party has an equal right to judge for itself, as well of infractions of the mode and measure of redress. That was the first resolution of this Kentucky resolution. And, I mean, if you hear what he's saying, it sounds a lot like what GR here has been saying. I mean, do you not hear that? I mean, this is obviously reeking of the fact that the federal government, or general, he calls it the general government like I do as well, it is a limited and defined and not unlimited to its own powers. I want to get into this next one, but I've only got a few minutes, so let me try to go forward with this. Resolved that the Constitution of the United States, having delegated to Congress a power to punish treason, counterfeiting, and securities and current coin of the United States, piracies and felonies committed on the high seas, and offenses against the law of nations, and no other crime whatsoever, and it being true as a general principle, and one of the amendments to the Constitution having also declared that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectfully or to the people. Therefore, the Act of Congress passed the 14th day of July, 1799, entitled An Act in Addition to the Act entitled for an Act for the Punishment of Certain Crimes Against the United States, as also the Act passed by them on the day of June 1798, entitled An Act to Punish Frauds Committed on the Bank of the United States, and all other acts which assume, create, define, or punish crimes other than those are enumerated in the Constitution, are altogether void of no force, and that the power to create, define, and punish such other crimes is reserved of right, appertains solely and exclusively to the respective states, each within its own territory. So he's just saying, and if you didn't garner, there we go, he listed these crimes. He just said that you can't pass anything. You don't have any jurisdiction over those crimes. You cannot step into this realm of enforcing a law that you don't have the power delegated to you to enforce. And so he basically said that these laws are void and of no consequence, but that doesn't stop the federal government from moving forward. This is where the principle of nullification came from. And had they been happy with nullification, then they would never have sent these things out. Because I'm telling you, nullification is like trying to kill an elephant with a fly swatter. You just can't do it. And as a matter of fact, what they did was they appealed to all the states to join them in reviewing the Constitution and calling out the federal government and forcing the federal government to basically withdraw this act and acknowledge the fact that they have overstepped their bounds and that they have to comply to that. And had they done that, that would have set precedence. But the problem was that these other states were in the throes or in the control of the Federalists. And I should say those state legislatures and those in power were kind of, you know, supporting the Federalists. That is why in 1800, when Jefferson became the third president of the United States, what ended up happening was a lot of these other states got rid of the other Federalists. By the time Monroe became president of the United States, the Federalists were basically gone. I mean, they were an extinct party. They had a mono party in the United States, and that was the Republicans. And so I'm at a hard break here. I'm going to get into more of these statements by Jefferson when we get back after we hear a word from our sponsors. So please stay tuned. I'll be right back.
I'm amazed at just how much Rippey Homes takes pride in their partnerships, from the designers they work with to the artisans they employ, and you, the homeowner. They relish in getting it right the first time. To do this, they place their focus up front on what you want and what you need and begin forming a plan like a sculpture, taking care of the intricate details. to ensure it meets your expectations. Whether you need innovation in a custom home to harmonize with the environment while offering the latest in building materials and technology, or simply adding a room, a bath remodel, they take a bottom-up approach that centers around you, the customer. They know that you are the integral component to the American dream, which is how they help you build your dream to make your dreams become a reality. Contact Cameron Rippey at cgrippy.com. That's Cameron Rippey at cgrippy.com.
This is GR Mobley. Most of you understand the importance of having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategic goal for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth. And many dentists will take your money to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail. And if you don't have a long-term strategy, you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain or restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Tracy at VonTracyDDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. This is GR Mobley. I've been on the radio for over a year, and for over a decade, I've been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we are going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument, and most do not like it for money reasons. If you have not read my executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can pick up my executive summaries, books, and content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you'll know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content. Most of it's free at reclaimingtherepublic.org and mobistrippress.com as well. This way, you can become a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. Hi, this is G.R. Mobley. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states, in accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution. These conventions require states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. These conventions are unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to get my executive summary on Republic Review and listen to Reclaiming the Republic right here on Red State Talk Radio every weekday evening from 6 to 5 Eastern and 3 to 4 Pacific. Thank you. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Isn't it funny how we actually can see the same patterns that happened back in the very beginning of this nation to today, and how parties are dividing us and pulling us in these different directions? And I'm not sure that both parties are, you know, the solution. I'm going to tell you they're not. The solution is that we have to take back our individual liberties. And if a party's not going to stand up to do that, and if a party is going to stand by or even support principles, regulations, and laws that violate our individual liberties, then we have a real problem. And as I said Wednesday, and as I said yesterday, and I will say today and always, that we have a failed policies and programs, and we have corrupted our mores. And let me go down this little path before I get into more words of Jefferson. How long did it take for Moses to change the culture of Israel so that they could go into the promised land? It took 40 years. But put it into context, folks. He didn't have a national education system ramming down, you know, perverted principles and godless ideologies down into Israel. He didn't have a mainstream media driving a narrative. He didn't have the entertainment industry trying to shame and call out people and try to use their elitist, obtuse arguments that, you know, we need to, you know, follow everybody else and become slaves to the state. The reason they want that is because then they become even better elitist or greater because they've isolated themselves even further from us. And so if you understand what is going on now, it happened back then, but it happened in a lot different ways. For us to change our culture and for us to get back onto the right track, we have to change. We have to shut down our school systems and the crap that they're driving into our kids' heads. We have to revamp completely that education system. And we're basically it. So if you understand the media, a lot of that's free market stuff. So you got to turn it down. You got to turn it off. And we have to start calling boycotts on all of these radio stations and all these TV stations that are conforming to political correctness. When you hear on a radio station a sterile environment regarding the Constitution on Constitution Day and those types of things, and you don't hear businesses standing up and saying, you know, we have to have the moral courage to do what's right here. And it's not taking guns. It's about re-injecting prayer and morals back into our society. You don't get away with creating a godless, immoral society and not have to deal with these types of consequences. Do you want these types of consequences to continue? Because they will. It doesn't matter if they're guns. These immoral and depraved individuals that they are going to come up with a different way. I told you yesterday about this kid in Alabama or Mississippi that was going to use propane tanks to blow up kids at school. It doesn't matter that if a kid wants to do immoral and terrible things, then they're going to do it. Unless they start getting wired to understanding how immoral it is to harm somebody and to judge somebody and to do those types of things. That's why we need to get back to the founding principles that made this country great. And it's not necessarily a slogan like MAGA. Slogans won't do it. We have to put the rubber to the road and start demanding the narrative that the schools are the problems. I mean, why don't we have any evidence of these types of problems to this degree throughout history well before the counterculture revolution? I mean, sure, there were kids that were a little, you know, party, rowdy. I mean, John Adams, I think he was disgraced by a grandson who got drunk and disorderly at Harvard and was thrown out. So kids will be kids, but these kids are godless, and that's why it's a race to the bottom, and I don't want to get there, folks. We have to take the narrative back, and I'm asking you, what will it take? What does it take? I mean, everything that we're dealing with all reeks and speaks to the need to get back into a constitutional republic once again and taking back the roles, responsibilities, and powers for those states, to get them back into the hands of the states, the communities, churches, and what have you. And let's move forward, starting to work on changing our culture like Moses had to as he wandered through the desert for 40 years. Anyway, let me get into this third point in the resolution here that Jefferson made. Resolve that it is true as a general principle, and it is also expressly declared by one of the amendments to the Constitution, that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people, and that no power over the freedom of religion, freedom of speech, or freedom of the press being delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, all lawful powers respecting the same did of right remain and will reserve to the states or the people, that thus was manifested by determination to retain to themselves the right of judging how far the licentiousness of speech and of the press may be abridged without lessening their useful freedom, and how far those abuses which cannot be separated from their use should be tolerated rather than the use be destroyed. Let me pause here. To be clear, at this point in time, states had all the power necessary to take away your guns. States had all the power necessary to enforce you to, you know, pay tithes to a religion, and they could ban religions. They could ban speech if they wanted to. They could take away your right to assemble. States had all the powers, and when Madison did the Bill of Rights, he kind of poked all of these states in the eye and said, look, you want me to create all these Bill of Rights, but you're not even offering your citizens these same protections. Shame on you. And so that's why a lot of the states also started redoing their constitutions, because it was kind of shameful. In the state of Massachusetts, if you were a Jew, you could not openly practice your faith until the 1830s. I think it was 1833. That's amazing, folks. That was over 50 years that the Jews were unable to openly practice their faith in our United States Constitutional Republic. Or almost 50 years, right? And so the question I have is, if the states had all these powers, then all what happened? How come the states don't have these powers? It's called the 14th Amendment. And if you read the 14th Amendment, Section 1, it basically states no state can abridge any individual right and privilege that is recognized in the kind. I'm paraphrasing, but go read it for yourself. The 14th Amendment is what applied the Bill of Rights to the privilege. You know, there's lots of people that argue with me, and I'm waiting for the phones to light up, and I only got a couple minutes, folks. So if you want to go into the argument, we'll have to continue it on Monday. But if you want to solve this problem, get rid of the 14th Amendment, and then states can start taking and confiscating guns. They can start taking away your ability for freedom of speech and your freedom of religious expression. Repeal the 14th Amendment, progressives, because you know what? That would get rid of the Anchor Baby Amendment as well. So the 14th Amendment is hated and loved by both sides of the aisle here. And I'm telling you that I believe and I support the idea that individual privileges and immunities should be protected, that the states should not be taking away the individual privileges and immunities. However, I do believe that the way they did it was brilliant, because states at that point in time could still have, and still did have, state-sponsored churches. I believe there were two or three states after the 14th Amendment that maintained a state church for almost a decade, if not more. And there were other states that were new that had joined the Union that had state-sponsored churches as well. The secularism was not secularism, as I have said before. It was non-denominational Christian. And there were plenty of states that persecuted and killed what they considered non-Christians and what have you. And a great example of that is the Mormons. If you studied history, regardless of how you feel about that faith or that religion, a cult, whatever, regardless of how you feel about it, there were two states that actually passed laws that say if you could prove a man to be Mormon, you could kill him. And the federal government didn't lift a finger to go after those states. I'm telling you that the 14th Amendment did not apply to the powers of the states over how it wanted to dictate religious, whether they wanted to ban religions or what have you. You could still practice or openly express yourself, but you could not have an open practice of religions when they were banned. And it was kind of an oxymoron, but that's how it was back then. And it really wasn't an oxymoron, because it was tightly controlled by very specific faiths. And I want you to know that we can do this together, but I need your support, I need your help, I need your consciousness, and I need you to start stepping into this. So work with me, and we will together reclaim this republic. And with that, have a great weekend. I'm out of here, and I will be back on Monday, same time. So God bless, and we'll talk to you on Monday.